This is the Microsoft Cloud Show, episode 265. Today, CJ talks about money, Teams and Skype convergence, and some news. Recorded live July 25th, 2018.
Raygun provides full-stack error, crash, and performance monitoring for tech teams. Whether you're a software engineer looking to diagnose and resolve issues with greater speed and accuracy, a product manager drowning in bug reports, or you're just concerned you're losing customers to poor quality online experiences, Raygun can provide you with the answers. Get full stack error and performance monitoring in one place. The next time you're struggling to replicate errors and performance issues in your codebase, think Raygun. Head over to raygun.com, get up and running within minutes, and dramatically improve the online experiences of your users.
Good morning. Well, welcome back, everybody. It's Chris here, or CJ. Flying solo without AC this week. He did a bang-up job last week of going alone without me, so this week it is my turn, and I am talking to you from a chilly but very sunny New Plymouth in New Zealand, which is where we're currently on holiday with our family, or with my family, I should say. But I'm taking time out today to record this show and make sure you stay up to date on all things going on in the Microsoft Cloud world. So thanks for bearing with me, and we'll be back to our regular programming hopefully next week. So today on the show, I've got a few news items and some interesting results from Microsoft. The first of which is their earnings release for FY 2018 Q4. Now, you know, normally we don't go into a lot of detail about earnings releases and things, but really there's a couple of things I want to touch on as it relates specifically to the cloud. As you know, Microsoft's going through a pretty serious transition in its or period of its life as a large corporate business, as it transitions away from some of its traditional Office and Windows products and into more cloud and services related products. And so this is super important that we, you know, that they're making headway in their cloud products. Obviously, we've talked about it on the show before, but again, this week we saw some really amazing results coming out from Microsoft. So at a top level, revenue for the quarter was $30.1 billion, which increased 17%. And when you're talking about billions of dollars, an increase of 17% is obviously a huge amount of money. But the interesting parts are in the detail. In particular, in the productivity and business process category, revenue was $9.7 billion, which is up 13%, which is pretty huge. Now, that consists of Office commercial revenue and cloud services, which were up 10%. And a big part of this was driven by Office 365 commercial revenue growth, which was up 38%, which is huge. So these are the licenses and the services that Microsoft sell to businesses all around the world for Office 365. Really nice to see commercial revenue growth there. They're obviously killing it in the cloud on that stuff. Office consumer as well. So these are subscriptions that you buy for things like your home PCs, your iPads, that sort of stuff. They were up to 31.4 million subscribers, right? So we've reported on this over the last couple of years, the steady growth, and 31.4 million, certainly nothing to sneeze at. I think last time they reported this was at 25. So really nice to see a decent bump in consumer revenue there. Now, one of the surprising standouts in this result was LinkedIn. Again, they count this in cloud revenue. LinkedIn revenue increased 37%, which was kind of staggering, really. I think this was really a standout for a lot of people. Weren't really expecting this. Really big deal for Microsoft. Obviously, LinkedIn is helping them on a revenue basis pretty significantly, so that's really nice to see. Dynamics up 11%. That was pretty nice. Now, Intelligent Cloud, which includes the Azure piece, up 23%, which was pretty incredible, and specifically Azure revenue growth was up 89%, which is a fairly significant bump of a business that size. I think we'll all agree, kind of a big deal. They go into talking about Windows and things. I was kind of surprised. Windows OEM revenue was up 7%, which was pretty amazing. Everybody's thinking Windows is slowly dying off, but Windows OEM revenue is obviously doing pretty well. Windows commercial products up 23%, gaming 39%, Surface 25%. Up, search up 17% from ad revenue, all that sort of stuff. Incredible, really. Amazing results and pretty big day for Microsoft. Obviously, their stock is doing all right as well off the back of this. If we look up, let's just have a quick look here. Microsoft stock quote, $107.66 as of recording this, which historically is, I think, the highest it's ever been or very, very close to it. The 52-week high, so the last year, is $108.20. So it's certainly up there in terms of the high. So it seems to be progressing its march towards dominance, but really nice to see all those cloud results coming in. Pretty kick-ass results for them. Okay, so enough about financials. Let's dive into some more news. Microsoft says that its Teams product is now at feature parity with Skype for Business Online. Now, I'm not sure if you've used Teams yet. I don't know how much truth there is to this claim. I think what they're trying to say here is that they've got all of the tech behind the scenes ready to bring the same set of features to Skype for Business. I'm not sure of the exact details of what they're saying, but at the Inspire Microsoft conference, which is their partner conference this last week, they're saying that they're at feature parity with Skype for Business, which that's a pretty big, bold claim. Now, there are apparently some people out there that are saying this is not quite right. There's a bunch of people on Twitter saying, no, it's not. You cannot chat one-on-one with external people, for example. There's all sorts of complications to the story, and it really depends on what they call feature parity. In my view, that would be all the features in Skype for Business are available in Teams, which is obviously not quite the case. So yeah, I think it depends on what they define as feature parity, which will be interesting to see. I'm not entirely sure what they mean by that, but I guess time will tell. Anyway, go take a look on Twitter. There's people saying, I think Microsoft are lying. You know, this is BS. There's a whole bunch of other things like that going on Twitter, which is pretty interesting. One interesting comment was that they could mean that there are private TAP programs or betas or something along those lines that are being run, which are at feature parity that we haven't seen yet. So that could also be the case. But it will be interesting to see in due course whether that's the case. Still no word on when they're going to drop support for Skype for Business Online. If you ask me, I don't think it's anytime soon still. For all of these reasons, obviously, it would seriously piss off a lot of customers if they deprecated Skype for Business Online. And I just don't think they can do it, honestly. Totally frankly, it's not quite the same yet. And businesses would have a fit. If they do give a date, I suspect it will be a couple of years away. I don't think they'll stick with a date that's, say, 1 year out. I think that would be too ambitious to ask all customers to get off Skype for Business. Given their telephony integration components and all that sort of stuff, I think 1 year is certainly not quite long enough. So I guess stay tuned for that. We will see what happens in due course. But yeah, who really knows? I guess if you're being pushed by Microsoft and have any more details, send us a tweet, get in touch with us, read us a question, that sort of thing.
A 99.9% SLA means you're protected from power outages, bad patches, natural disasters, and maybe even a dinosaur attack. Does it protect you from yourself, though? AvePoint Backup for SharePoint Online provides full fidelity backup and recovery, from individual items to entire sites. AvePoint can run backups up to 4 times a day to ensure your data is secure. Recover anytime you want without having to pick up the phone and schedule restore windows. Learn why AvePoint is the Microsoft Cloud expert at www.avpoint.com.
Okay, moving right along. So there is a new Gartner Magic Quadrant that's come out where Microsoft has been recognized as a leader in analytics and BI platforms. So this is a new Gartner Magic Quadrant that comes out specifically around analytics and business intelligence, the 2018 edition, and Microsoft are recognized as a leader in Gartner's latest evaluation. So if you take a look, I will post the link in the show notes here where you can go and register for a copy of the report for more detail. But there are three folks in the leaders quadrant, Tableau, Microsoft, and Click, I believe you pronounce it. Microsoft are by far and away the furthest along in terms of completeness of vision, which is the axis along the bottom of the Magic Quadrant. And they're about on par with Tableau in terms of the ability to execute axis, which is the vertical axis. So they're about on par with Tableau, but certainly further to the right in terms of completeness of vision, which I found pretty interesting. Probably other players here, MicroStrategy are in the Challengers quadrant. Salesforce are in the Visionaries quadrant, which is just below the Leaders quadrant, along with IBM, SAP, SAS, and so forth. And then in the niche players, you've got folks like Pyramid Analytics, Yellowfin, Domo, Oracle, which I thought was kind of interesting, and Burst, and so forth. So if you're interested in Power BI and business intelligence in general, go up, follow the link. It'll take you to a Microsoft website where you can register for the report, complimentary report, download, and there's more information in there about obviously what went into the evaluation, strengths and weaknesses of each player and all that sort of stuff, and sort of what made up the magic quadrant and how they got to where they did. So that's BI and analytics. Now, we got a email, actually. Let me pull it up here, from a chap who is working on an open source project. Serge Semenov, if you're listening, thanks for listening to the show. I really appreciated your note. The subject of his mail was called C# is the Future of Distributed Computing. And his note says, "Hi, Andrew and Chris. I like your shows, which bring good insights, especially around Azure technologies. If it seems relevant to you, I found a way how to turn C# into a distributed computing programming language to developer code-first cloud-native applications. Wondering if you would do a talk about an open source project that I called D-Async to promote .NET platform in perspective of uprising microservices and serverless computing." Well, thank you, Serge, for getting in touch with us. We love open source projects, obviously. Yours looks really interesting, I've got to say. So again, we will link to this in the show notes. It's called D-Async. Now, from my rudimentary understanding here, is this is a framework that is all about building microservices using C# and helping you do that. So for example, things like inter-service communication, dependency injection, transactions, scalability and parallel execution across microservices, integration with other TPL functions here. So being able to deal with, you know, multi-cores and threading and all those sorts of things. Looks like a really interesting project. I haven't dug into it more than that, but I definitely will. This looks pretty interesting. It's getting a bit of traction on GitHub now as well, which is really nice. So it's called D-Async, A-S-Y-N-C. And I'll just read the little snippet about what it is off GitHub here. D-Async is an ambitious framework for writing cloud-native distributed applications in C# language using just its syntax and paradigms of object-oriented programming with the help of built-in support for task parallel library. So the async and await keywords. So, you know, building microservice-based applications can be quite tough, certainly around things like talking between services, distributed logging, debugging, all these kinds of things that we take for granted in a monolithic application. And there's a bunch of frameworks for different languages that try to help with this, and this looks like a great start called D-Async for C#. If you're building .NET applications, then definitely go take a look at it. So, Serge, thank you very much again for taking the time to write into the show. We really appreciate it. Your framework looks really interesting, and we will definitely take a look, and we hope some of our listeners do as well. So, staying on the topic of developers, Scott Hanselman actually came out with a really interesting tweet this week that said, you can now type code and then period, you know, space period, and get a lovely text editor now on Azure at shell.azure.com, which I thought was pretty cool. So the idea here is that you can dive into your cloud shell in Azure and type code space period, and it'll launch basically into kind of a mini version of .NET code right from within your browser. And so you could try this out at shell.azure.com, which is pretty cool. There's a bit of conversation here on Twitter about what it is and all that sort of stuff. People saying, is this VS Code web version? And Scott Hanselman says it's the Monaco edition that powers code, but it's not actually the code product itself. So it's a piece of it, for example. Pretty cool. Definitely worth trying out. I thought it was a really neat feature, and I will definitely be trying it out. Right. If you are interested in Azure storage and how fast things are, there's a really cool post that we found where a chap basically does a big set of tests on how fast is Azure storage, including the disks that you can attach to machines. And so by speed, basically, he does a whole bunch of tests on things like latency for reads and writes, I/O throughput, IOPS, and all those kinds of things. to test different size disks. I won't go through all the results, but he ran basically two tests per configuration. The standard hard drive disks that are available in Azure, read and write, SSDs, read and write, local SSDs, read and write, hard drives again with read and write but with hardware caching enabled, and then SSDs with read and write with hardware caching enabled. Did it on different size disks and things like that. And then there's a nice table of results here about average latency and min and maxes, that kind of thing, and whether he's got caching and stuff turned on. So if you're like me and you've sat there and pondered, you know, what kind of disk do I need to attach for this particular workload and things, this post might be relevant and useful for you if you're interested in taking a look at what disks are available in Azure, what their latencies are, and what you might need for your particular workload, just to see, you know, kind of what you're going to need to get your apps humming along or your workloads running in, you know, in Azure. And I think he says it, zoom. It's kind of the phrase he uses here. So it hit the front page of Hacker News, which is where I picked it up from. And I thought it was super interesting. I love it when independent third-party people do these kinds of things, because it means that it's not just Microsoft doing the tests and you're wondering whether they've kind of left out the bad bits. You know, you need the good, the bad, and the ugly. And so it's really nice to see third parties do this. In a nutshell, there are some pretty quick disks around. SSDs with caching on, pretty spectacular. Let me see here. So caching on, SSDs, reads and writes, average latency about half a millisecond for both read and write on average, and the minimum latency was about 0.16 of a millisecond, which is pretty quick. But then there are plenty of options. So like right down at the slow end is no caching, spinning drive, so hard drive, read and write operations, average latency of about 18 milliseconds for writes and about 11 milliseconds for reads. So yeah, you can get a plethora of different options for caching and for disks and speeds and all that sort of stuff, depending on what you need. But again, I really liked this report. I think it's definitely worth looking at. I mean, you know, you sit there and you look at these drives and you wonder what sort of performance you're going to get. Well, this could be a good reference for helping decode some of those unknowns.
Are you being asked repeatedly to integrate different business systems in ever narrower timeframes and with increasing process complexity? What if you could standardize the way you build these business processes so your team are focusing on higher value tasks versus the nuts and bolts of running the processes and integrations? Nintex can make it happen. With a Nintex platform, work flows from person to person, system to system, to the cloud and back. Got a custom system you want to connect with? No-code extensions let you plug into systems simply and easily using REST and Swagger. With Nintex, work just flows, so your teams can work smarter, work faster, and be more connected than ever. Try it out free for 30 days at www.nintex.com/try-NWC.
All right. So I came across a tweet from Zach Bowden that said, "So since the Surface Go features a 10-inch screen, Office Mobile should technically be free on it forever. Surprised Microsoft isn't advertising this fact more openly." What was interesting is, for a long time, Office Mobile had the distinction of anything under a 10-inch screen would serve as being free, I believe, and then anything over a 10-inch screen would technically be called like a productivity machine or, you know, a computer, laptop, that sort of thing, and so that you needed to buy Office. So the new Surface Go, which is bang on a 10-inch screen, I believe, he's basically saying that Office Mobile should be free on it forever, which I thought was a really kind of interesting fact. And when you consider the value of Office on one of these devices and having to pay for the subscription, all that sort of stuff, yeah, it seems like a really good value for money. I just found this tweet interesting. If you're interested in the Surface Go, obviously this might be something pretty interesting to you, especially for things like students, I imagine. Would be pretty awesome. So yeah, Zach Bowden, he's an editor at Windows Central on Twitter. And so kind of an interesting tidbit there. Okie doke, moving right along. So there is a new Azure API, which I think was kind of interesting, called Azure Cost Forecast API and Other Updates was the name of the blog, at least. So you really don't know how much you're going to spend in Azure, or at least I have a really tough time figuring it out, especially as your costs increase and all that, and you need to be able to forecast what what you're going to spend when your boss asks how much we're going to spend on Azure and what will adding these things cost additional, you know, as additional costs and things to your application. So the forecast API will predict or will, I guess, give you detail on either daily or monthly forecast with a 95% confidence, which is pretty cool. So this API will help you basically say, here are the things I've got in my subscription and that, and then what's my bill going to be effectively, which kind of nice. There's a bunch of services here, you know, that we've had on the show as well, and that we've talked a little bit about, really about cost analysis. So figuring out what you're spending money on. But this is really talking about forecasting your spend. So we've had overcast.cloud as a service from our friends at ShareGate. They've come on the show and talked about it before, but basically they give you a whole bunch of tips and advice on how to reduce your spend. And I imagine they'd be integrating, if not having done this already, but integrating this forecasting to really see what you will be spending looking forward, especially if you make these, you know, the adjustments and things that they give you as advice as part of Overcast. So yes, there's a whole blog post up here from a principal program manager of the Azure Intelligence Platform, which talks about the API, talks about location and service data normalization, and talks about price sheet mapping to usage details. So the price sheet API talks about the prices for each meter on each offer in Azure, making that a whole bunch simpler to use. So things like new fields in the usage API, the offer ID, the part number, the resource grid, and new fields in the price sheet API being the offer ID. Anyway, so a bunch of improvements around APIs for predicting your cost and managing your costs in Azure. Okay, just before we wrap up, I've got another blog post here from Alex Weinart from the Azure team. He's a program manager for the Microsoft Identity Security and Protection team. They are upping the ante in their bug bounty program or their bounty program, and specifically in a couple of different areas. They're enhancing their existing program with three things: identity standards bounties. So things like OAuth2, OpenID Connect, the FIDO2 standards, things like that. I guess if you go find a hole in those and contribute it, then you can pay a bounty. They get paid a bounty for those from Microsoft. The second one is sensitive user data bounties. So this is they pay you bounties on collection of inappropriately shared sensitive user data, which is another addition to that. And also they're increasing the bounties. So they'll say up to $100,000 in some cases for various bounties and vulnerabilities and so forth for identity systems. So they're really kind of upping the ante around the Microsoft Identity Platform. You can go and find out more at the Microsoft Identity Bounty Program website, which is linked off this blog post. These systems and tools are the cornerstone to Microsoft in the cloud. And it's obviously super important for them to keep those secure and private and running well. And obviously, they're keen to get community involvement in doing that by offering these bounties and making sure it's very compelling, let's say, for people to come forward if they find something so that Microsoft can go fix them.
CJ's Hyperfish automates the collection of user profile information from users in organizational directories such as Office 365, SharePoint, Active Directory, and HR systems. The secure service supports on-premises, hybrid, and online environments. Bring your directory to life at hyperfish.com.
AC's Voitanos delivers on-demand video-based training for developers on the latest SharePoint extensibility model from Microsoft in his course, Mastering the SharePoint Framework.
Okay, now no show would be complete without a pick. And being in New Zealand has reminded me about how much I enjoy watching rugby. If you've never watched rugby before, it's a pretty great game to watch, at least I think. And I find it really quite a beautiful game to watch, very flowing and definitely quicker than American football if you watched any of those. Anyway, there is a new rugby league started up in the US called Major League Rugby. And I just thought I'd touch on this as a bit of a pick. If you're interested in experiencing rugby, you can now watch it on ESPN Plus and Root Sports and all this sort of stuff. But anyway, there are teams across the country. So the one in Seattle is called the Seattle Seawolves, which is obviously the Seattle team. You can go see them. The games are really, really inexpensive to go to and pretty cool. Go get gear and all that sort of stuff. If you've ever been interested in rugby and you're in the US, then Major League Rugby is a new league that you can go check that out. Just so happens that the Seawolves won the inaugural Major League Rugby Championship. So I'm not sure if it's that there are a bunch of Kiwis, Aussies, South Africans, English, Irish, French, Argentinian players in the Seattle region or whatnot. But yeah, pretty cool. So if you're ever interested, go check it out at usml.com. And it's the Major League Rugby tournament in the US. So thanks again for bearing with me. Apologies about it just being me. We'll be back to regular programming when I get back to the States, and AC is back from travel as well. And we hope to see you then. So thanks again, and we'll see you next time.
Did you like this episode? Please tweet about it and drop a 5-star review in iTunes. Word of mouth recommendations are the most effective ways for us to grow the show. We'd really appreciate it. If you have a question for us, go to microsoftcloudshow.com/questions, where you can submit it as text or record it as an MP3 or WAV file and provide a link so we can play your question on the show. Our theme music is brought to you by Keith Ritchie. For more information on Keith's music, head to music.kritchie.com. You can subscribe to us in iTunes and Google Play Store by searching for Microsoft Cloud Show or via RSS at microsoftcloudshow.com, where you'll also find show notes of each episode. You can also find us on Facebook searching for Microsoft Cloud Show or on Twitter at MS Cloud Show. And finally, sign up for our mailing list by heading over to our website and entering your email to interact with us, participate in upcoming interviews, and other cool stuff. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.